Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report, your source for libertarian commentary on current events in the Ocean State and Southern New England. Coming to you from Rothbard Studios, here are your hosts, Mike and Eric.
Welcome to the Rhode Island Liberty Report from LibertyRI.com. This is episode 13 of the report, the podcast. And here in the studio with me, as always, is Eric.
I'm here. How's it going, Mike?
Good. I'm Mike, of course.
the one and only.
Finally, some nice weather we're getting here.
That's beautiful.
Always a good
beautiful
thing.
Out. Right?
Yeah. So what's been going on?
Not much. It's nice being in here a couple of weeks in a row. We're really, it's there's always so much going on week to week in this crazy little state we live in, and there's never there's always a lot to talk about. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Things are going good. My daughter just turned two.
Yeah.
Recently, so that was exciting.
Very good.
Yeah. You know, wow.
Went
down to the public fire station. And some of our tax dollars worth of entertainment. They were awesome. They let them look at the trucks and sit in the trucks and stuff. And she loves fire trucks. And they were great. And it was a lot of fun. So
you bring up a good point. Like oftentimes we criticize the organizations and the bureaucracy of say either fire departments or government or whatever. It's not necessarily the people that we have the issue with.
I have a lot
of good friends that are firemen and work in government, family members,
Certainly.
I myself was in the military. I have a lot of friends that are still either retired. Well, most of them are retiring now, but they're good people. It's just the whole apparatus.
Yeah, it's don't hate the player, hate the game.
That's right. Exactly.
I mean, that's right. I mean,
right.
That's as thugged out as I'm ever going to get, man. I'll tell you. I think the other thing too, I think, which is interesting is there's always a little voice in the back of my head, that chirps in and is like, oh, am I somehow a hypocrite because, I'm utilizing, a public resource for some reason for my own reasons or whatever. Is that somehow hypocritical? And, it's an interesting thought experiment.
It is.
In my opinion, the way I look at it, it's like, in terms of getting things from government, like they're taking it from me to begin with. Right. So as long as I'm not taking more than is being taken from me,
right,
then I don't really see a problem personally. And the system is the way the system is, and in a monopolized system, you don't really have a choice my daughter loves fire trucks. Where am I going to go? A privately run fire engine museum? I mean, there's not a lot of those around.
Not anymore.
There's not a lot of places I can go, So you're kind of left without an option. But it is an interesting thought experiment, something to think about, and I think that trips a lot of people up sometimes.
You bring up a very good point because it gets thrown at libertarians often is, well, don't drive on the roads. I'm forced to drive on the roads. Yeah. I don't have a choice.
Don't collect Social Security when you're older, you know.
But that doesn't negate the fact that I can either complain about it or advocate for something better or a different way to do it.
Absolutely not. There's no issue there.
Yeah.
And speaking of monopolies,
right.
One of the funny things as far as I'm concerned about the left, especially because it does tend to be the left who is the most in favor of unions. Right. And obviously firefighters are entirely unionized in the state as they are pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
Unless you're talking about a volunteer fire department or something like that, which we also do have those in the state as well.
Mm-hmm.
The left, especially the progressives, are so anti-monopoly when it comes to the private sector, right? But when it comes to the government, it's like they don't recognize that as a monopoly, right? And when it comes to unions, and specifically public sector unions, they don't look at that like what it is, which is a monopoly on labor, right? In a sense,
yep.
In a sense, I think union membership in the state only amounts to like 13% mm-hmm. or something like that of all workers in the state. So, you still have a huge majority of workers are non-union.
No, public sector, correct.
Well, in public sector, I think almost all workers are unionized. No,
what I'm saying is a percentage of the population, 13% or percentage of workers.
I think that that's public and private combined.
Okay.
And I think, and obviously, the vast majority of union membership is public compared to private. Private unions are kind of really going by the wayside. But so we've got, the big news this week was we had these two two different bills that are now law, basically. One of them was signed by the governor, which was known as the Evergreen Contracts Bill, which, you know, that's sort of a nickname that it has, but it's basically a continuing contract bill, which basically means that when unions negotiate a contract with a town or a municipality and that contract runs out, if there isn't already another contract that's in place to take its place, if they haven't negotiated something out, or maybe there's an issue there, they're not coming to terms. This law basically just says that the municipality is mandated by law to provide whatever the last year of that contract was to the workers while that's going on, right? Regardless of anything else, which the governor signed this week. And, you know, interestingly enough, most municipalities already practice this on their own, because it kind of makes sense. You know, while you're negotiating, they're already making their salaries, their wages, and their benefits, and so it makes sense to sort of just keep paying them what they're making already while you're negotiating a new contract. The problem that municipalities are having with this bill, and the reason why they opposed it last year, the reason why the governor opposed it last year, was because there are situations where when municipalities are falling into financial hardship, and a contract, you know, ends, that they want to have the freedom to make certain cuts if they need to. And this law prevents them from doing that. It basically ensures that regardless of whatever their financial situation is, they're going to have to continue to pay whatever they've been paying. They can't make unilateral cuts to wages, right, or benefits. Now, it's just one more thing quickly on this particular bill, because there's another one we'll get to too. But the interesting thing about this one is Raimondo's sort of flip-flop on this. Right. So she last year. So the claim is that this bill is vastly different from the bill that was introduced last year, which, as you'll see, is kind of ridiculous. This is what the governor had to say about this legislation last year. Okay, this is a quote. This is from the Providence Journal. She said, "Current Rhode Island law protects the taxpayers from being obligated indefinitely for contract provisions that, in the future, may not be affordable. The proposed legislation before me extinguishes this existing protection, hurting the public's position in contract negotiations and placing taxpayers at risk of being forever locked into contractual provisions they can no longer afford." Which is basically what I just said.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Makes sense. That's a very logical position for her to have taken last year. And that's in what she said. So this year, what she said was she felt that the, let's see what she said. She said it differs from the one she vetoed, which she felt went too far in automatically extending all provisions in collective bargaining agreements for municipal employees and teachers until a successor agreement has been reached. Now, so what's different about this year's bill? Well, what's different is that this year's bill only protects wages and benefits. Only wages and benefits, which,
which is,
as far as I know,
pretty much everything.
Pretty much the entire contract, with, you know, the exception of, what, 1% of whatever what else are we talking about? Personal days? I mean, that's a benefit.
That's true.
So I'm trying to figure out, like, what else is there in the contract that could possibly, I don't, you know, be extended that made this so different that she changed course on it so drastically. I think the answer to that is nothing. I think that this is all political. I think it's, you know, she wants the union support for whatever her next step is, and you know, and that's it. And that's the way I see it. So
yeah, it's interesting. You know, I wonder what else could be protected. Could it be like things like hours to work, working conditions? I don't know. Those part of union contracts that they need to, you know, protect. That's mind-boggling. That it's not really, because this is what they do, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you told me, like, I can't imagine being a union member and being like, oh man, they're only going to keep our wages and benefits.
Yeah. So she just came off of an election, right? So,
right.
You got to wonder, did she get something prior to this? You know, after that, and then, okay, well, if you guys hook me up for this next election, then I'll, I don't know.
Right. So this is the way they do things, right? Instead of being blatant, you know, blatantly her signing the legislation last year and then them supporting her, what they do is they support her in advance, in hopes that down the road, you know, later in the year, she will then support the legislation that they want, right? So it actually, it tends to be come off less obvious in terms of there being a quid pro quo in the situation. So it seems pretty obvious to me what's going on here. And this is very bad for municipalities. And a lot of them are lining up in opposition to this and the next bill that we'll also talk about. But I don't know. I just wonder, Mike, like I mean, again, we talk about monopolies. I mean, you've got the state, which is basically totally controlling local contracts. And they're trying to do this with teacher contracts as well, which we talked about a couple of podcast episodes ago with the regionalization legislation that's before the state house. You know, this is just a continuation of that. They want to control every contract, you know, public contract in the state, down to your local, you know, your local school board or you know, your local police department or whatever.
Well, that's the thing, right? They've got you by the, you know what? Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those. I might have said this story before in a union discussion on the podcast. I'm not sure, but it's from years ago. I remember someone in a conversation telling me, and I believe it was about the East Providence teacher negotiation. So that had been quite a few years ago. Where the discussion at the table was, you know, the school committee person was saying, look, we don't have any more money to give you. Like you can't get blood from a stone, essentially, is what he's telling them. And the person across from them says, don't give me any of that crap. You guys can always raise taxes. So like, that's the mentality they have. Like, you know, we want what's ours. Just, you got to raise taxes and sorry, deal with those benefits and don't get reelected or whatever you've, you know, whatever the pay, you know, the results of that are. So it's that mentality, you know, whereas
just raise taxes, right?
In the private sector, the business, the business can just go out of business, right? There's something that will happen there. The business will just go under, or they'll move to a different state, you know,
right.
And that happens a lot, right? So, but in the public sector, that can't happen. Like, you can't
move the town to another state.
Right. I think
Block Island at one point in the 80s, voted to secede from Rhode Island and become a part of Colorado. I think.
Oh, no way.
I think that's a true story. I remember hearing about that when I went back way back when I was in middle school. I remember, you know, we were on like a class trip to Block Island and I remember that being the case. I'm pretty sure that's legit.
That'd be cool to look up.
And of course, you know, they weren't going to let that happen.
Right.
But they wanted to become a part of Colorado, which isn't even geographically, you know, proximal to the island.
Well, complete side tangent. You talk about secession, right? When we kind of hit on that last week on this Sanctuary City thing, which I think is quite funny.
Right? And I think you bring up a good point about private business, right? The equivalent of raising taxes is raising prices. And businesses don't have the luxury of a police force that will force people to pay higher prices if they raise them.
Right.
Right. So if a business raises prices, let's put the scenario out there. The state mandates that all local businesses must pay their employees, you know, $15 an hour or whatever. So one of the things that a business can do to react to that is to raise prices, right? But they can only raise prices so high. And actually, if you think about it, most businesses are already charging the most that they possibly can.
The market has determined.
For a product, right? Right? Because why wouldn't they, right? In order for them to be successful. So that's not even a viable option necessarily, is to raise prices. But the town can raise taxes, and they don't have necessarily the same consequences that private business might have. You know, people are kind of, if people don't pay those higher prices, they're going to go to jail.
Right.
They don't have a choice, right? Or they're going to have their property taken away or whatever. Now,
I suppose a person can move, right? And then they lose their tax base, which
they couldn't. And that happens. And that does happen.
Or the state, Detroit.
Right.
Something.
Right. Or the state comes in and takes it over, or the town goes into receivership like Central Falls, or, you know, I'm not sure if that happened with Woonsocket. I know they were pretty
bad
shape as well. But, you know, towns are just incorporations. There's corporations. They're incorporated. They're all incorporated. You know, this. I think that there's a lot of mayors in this state who will have very creative ways, as you will see, as I will mention in a bit, of trying to react to some of these crazy laws. So the next one has to do with firefighters. Now, full disclosure, I was a volunteer firefighter for a number of years, about 4 or 5 years, and I can tell you that There were a number of people I volunteered with who were also paid on the job in other departments and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they lived in the community and volunteered their time. But there, I definitely experienced a attitude from union firefighters, from paid firefighters towards volunteers, right? It's almost, you're almost a sort of
like a scab.
You're almost a de facto scab, right? Yeah. And there was like an attitude and it wasn't reciprocal, right? You know, it's not like I don't have any issue with people who choose to join a fire department and they're forced to join a union. I don't know if they like it or not. It doesn't really matter. Whatever. I don't hold it against them, but the reverse is not, it's not the same in reverse, right? So anyway, so this law that was passed, basically it mandates that towns must pay their firefighters overtime pay, which I believe is time and a half. For any hours worked over 42 hours. So now you might think to yourself, well, you know, a 40-hour work week, mm-hmm. anything over that is usually considered overtime, right?
Right.
Well, as far as the feds are concerned, it's actually 53 or 54 hours when it comes to firefighters in terms of what an average work week is. And the reason for that is because a lot of firefighter shifts are overnight when there's not necessarily a lot of stuff going on. And a lot of the time they're sleeping. They're on call. And of course, you know, in busy departments, they're up and they're running all the time, right? But in a lot of municipalities, they're sleeping most of the night. I mean, it's just the truth of the matter. And so that's why the average work week for a firefighter actually is more hours. Mm-hmm. And so now basically this is, you know, if the average work week for a firefighter is 53, 54 hours or 56 hours, I believe is what it is in the state. Now, you know, there's 12 hours there that are now going to have to be time and a half. And I think it was, I forget the community, it was Central Coventry who calculated that it would cost them an extra $720,000 a year to meet this new mandate. And that's Central Coventry.
Right.
I mean, that's a small area. I know there is one mayor who I will not name who is considering taking the beds out of the fire station completely in response to this.
Right.
If you're going to pay time and a half, you're going to be doing something.
Sweeping floors.
Something.
Polishing chrome on the fire truck.
Something.
Yeah, something.
So anyway, it's just, again, it's just the state collectively bargaining for, on behalf of the town. So taking all the power away from the local municipalities to negotiate contracts the way that is best for them, basically. Right. And you know, it's gonna crush local communities. It's gonna hurt. It's gonna people's property taxes are gonna have to go up, or their evaluations will go up, or something.
So, yeah,
something's gonna happen. You're gonna pay more money. Isn't that how it always ends?
That's it.
You end up paying more money.
Yeah.
Right. And that, and you know, to service a minority of the population.
Right.
A percentage of the population that might be 1 in 10 people.
Yeah.
So you know.
What's interesting though is, you know, that's not something people tend to get mad about, because that's a sacred cow, right? Fire departments are a sacred cow, you know, fire rescue, to a degree, rightfully so. They do it is a noble profession. Obviously, they'd save lives, right? It's not, it's not something to be taken lightly. But the reality is, in the real world, it is an expense that you need to. pay for, right?
Yeah, so. And one thing I can say too is that I think this monopoly on fire services has hurt firefighters.
Yeah,
in terms of the working conditions and the number of hours they have to work to meet the demand, right? If this was a privatized system that was funded by insurance dollars, for instance, right? Just like it used to be, right? Yep. Then you'd have multiple different fire protection companies. Able to meet the demand, sort of. You know, this sort of goes along with the supermarket analogy that we talked about last episode, in the sense that, you know, when you have only one market chain that's limited in resources, mm-hmm. To service an entire metropolitan area, you're going to have food shortages. You're going to have people working long hours. You're going to have burnout. You're going to have all these problems. You're going to have facilities that are falling apart, old, you know, trucks and things that are breaking down. Whereas if it was a privatized system, right, the demand would be spread out amongst many different service providers that you could choose from, depending on, you know, what you wanted or what you liked or what, you know, they had to offer. And I think that under a system like that, firefighters would have a much better working conditions. Right now in Providence, you've got people who work the rescue in Providence who, no joke, will leave the station at the start of their shift on a call and will not actually make it back to the station until their 10-hour, 12-hour shift is over.
Right.
They go from call to call to call, from the hospital to another call to another. That's how busy they are. And why? Because it only makes sense. In a monopoly, costs go up, quality goes down, and working conditions go down. And they're strapped, they're stressed, they don't have much to work with.
Yeah.
And that's because of this monopoly.
And when you say quality goes down, people will get mad at something like that, right? You're not saying that the job that they're doing is substandard because they're bad people.
No.
It's they're just overworked
or the quality of the trucks.
Right, exactly. Right? Maintenance and all that stuff.
The rescues in Providence, just to use an example, are old.
Yeah.
The fire trucks are old, and they're buying new fire trucks. They're used fire trucks from some other department somewhere. Right. I mean, you know, this stuff is expensive, and that's what I mean when I say the quality goes down. No, right? Yeah. But an overworked EMT who's exhausted and burnt out is not going to be as good as one who's well rested and working a normal number of hours. And right, I mean, it's not their fault.
No,
it's not their fault. It's the system's fault. Yeah. And this is what happens. And this is one of those issues that I'm personally very passionate about because I was a volunteer firefighter.
Yeah.
Education and the fire service. When it comes to breaking those public monopolies or something that I'm personally very invested in and have a lot of ideas about.
Yeah. I've read articles in the past because this, again, being a libertarian, this always comes up. The first thing they throw at you is either the roads or the fire department and the police and all that kind of stuff. And I've researched in the past out west, I want to say Arizona, New Mexico, maybe. There's private fire departments that service communities. The towns have decided to hire I don't even know if it's the towns, but there are private fire departments. I know for a fact when I was overseas as a contractor, I have a good friend that worked as a firefighter, contractor, civilian firefighter. He also has a pretty cool, I don't want to say too much, but pretty cool job in private industry as a private firefighter. I do know in my own work, I've worked with organizations that, they're big facilities and they have their own fire departments, if you will, that the company owns on site.
Right.
They, for industrial reasons. Right. So, I mean, but they have fire trucks and some of it's quite advanced because of the processes that they're doing on these facilities. And the local town will support them, but the local town doesn't have the equipment to, because it wouldn't make sense, right, for the local town. They're fighting structure fires and houses and things like this. They're not doing, you know, so it makes sense for the private company to have their own stuff. So it is out there, and it's, you know, and you mentioned it before in the years, you know, many years ago, we used to have the little badge that you nailed to the outside of your house, so you knew that you paid your yearly fee for fire protection. And that's an interesting example because there was another example, I want to say again, out west somewhere, maybe Kentucky or Tennessee, something like that, where there was, they had a rural community that wasn't serviced by, they were in like the county, right? So they weren't in the limits of the town, but the local town, the town closest said, we will provide fire protection for you, but since you're not paying taxes to the town, you have to pay a fee, whatever it was, $75 a year or something like that. So there was a case where a gentleman or family didn't pay their fee and the fire department let the house burn, right? They protected houses to the left and right that had paid their fee. They were on standby in case those did. So, you know, that the thing with that little badge that you put on your house, that's almost like a bit of social pressure, right? So you go down, you look at your neighbor, especially in our area, right? We have densely populated neighborhoods. You look at your neighbor's house and he doesn't have his badge or she doesn't have his badge, her badge. What are you doing? Like, You know,
you're putting my property right. in danger, bud.
Exactly. It's like cutting your grass, right? Like my grass is a mess right now because the weather's been crappy. But like I pulled up in the driveway this morning. I looked, I'm like, God, this is a little embarrassing. My neighbor's got a beautiful lawn and it's all cut. I'm like, I need to get this done. Right. It's social pressure. It's,
right. Yeah, of course. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
And I think that, you know, that case you mentioned in Tennessee, you know, look, it's the guy took a chance.
Yep.
And honestly, I'm sure there were lots of other people in that community who took that same chance and never had anything bad happen and saved a bunch of money. But that's why you pay. That's why you buy insurance.
Yeah.
And that's why you buy. You know, this drives me nuts because people hate insurance companies. Right. But they provide a very important service. And I think that there's a lot of these public sector monopolies would be so much better serviced by insurance, an insurance model. Mm-hmm. One of the most interesting ideas being national defense. Joe Rogan was talking to Tulsi Gabbard recently on his podcast, and they were talking about the military industrial complex and how, you know, these contractors want to make all this money and that's why they want to start wars and blah 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 blah. Well, look, if the model was, if they weren't paid by the government, right, if they were paid by insurance companies would have an interest in not starting wars,
right?
Because then they'd be paying out policies left and right. They have the opposite motivation as a military contracting company, right, who is getting a blank check so they can start as many wars as, you know, or fight as many wars as they want. So, and it's the same with fire protection and police services and prisons and all that stuff, in the sense that insurance companies don't want to pay. They don't want the bad thing to happen.
They're a business. They want to make money.
Right. They don't want your house to burn down. No. Believe me, that's the last thing they want. So you can't tell me that a fire department paid for by an insurance company wouldn't be there as fast as possible to keep as much of that house standing as possible, because that insurance company is not going to want to pay to put it back up.
Right.
So, you know, it makes sense to me. And I think that, you know, that's why we're doing this podcast, is to put these ideas out there and see what people think.
Insurance is a good one, actually. We should, you know, at a future podcast, if we have an opportunity, something pops up that we can expand on that. That's a
good one. We do know somebody in the insurance industry.
Actually, we do. I've talked about getting him on the podcast after the election, unfortunately. But it's
not. Of course, we're talking about Billy.
Bill Hunt. Bill Hunt that ran for District 68 in Bristol Warren for state rep. So, so another interesting thing that came out this past week, an article that we posted on the Facebook page, and it generated quite a bit of discussion and response, is the increased, an article from, the article we posted was from WPRI, state police assigned extra troopers to enforce seatbelt laws. Decent reach. We reached almost 2,500 people. We had about 30 comments, 10 shares, and so it got quite a decent response. Quite interesting, right? Seatbelt laws. You know, this is complete nanny state crap that you know, the government's there to protect you from yourself, right? And they make it seem like this is all about safety, and they want you to be safe. But correct me if I'm wrong, isn't Rhode Island one of the few states that doesn't have a helmet law for motorcycle?
I believe that is true, yes.
So if they were so concerned about safety, you know, and they pass laws to keep you safe, wouldn't they have a helmet law? Not to say I would advocate for a helmet law, but I'm saying if that's their mentality, why aren't they, why isn't there a helmet law?
So, I just don't get what the, you know, again, you say the rationale is safety, right? That's their rationale, right? But then if you come back at them with the argument of, well, look, it's my life. You know, if I don't like wearing a seatbelt, I mean, who is it affecting besides me, right? What they come back with is, well, what if you get in an accident and, you know, you suffer incredible bodily injury because you weren't wearing a seatbelt. And now the other person's insurance, right, or has to pay for that or whatever. You know, they try to make this other argument like it's somehow better for the other drivers.
Yeah.
If you're wearing a seatbelt.
Right.
And I don't
have effects on premiums and all this other stuff, right?
Yeah, I don't, you know, look, you could also make the argument that wearing a seatbelt in a lot of cases makes people drive more recklessly because they have this false sense of security. there was a study that was done on football players, right? And there's somebody from Yale or something who watched old film of old football games when they didn't wear any helmets,
yeah,
right, and analyze the way that they tackled and where that they would where they would attack the other person, where they would hit them, where they would take hits, and then analyzed each era when they went to the leather helmets and then they went to the more solid helmets,
yeah,
then they put the face mask on and all this stuff, and what they found was that as the helmets got bigger and stronger and more protective, the hits got heavier and worse, and people started. Running backs started lowering their heads down and charging into the defensive line, and you had more neck injuries and more all sorts of things because there was a sense of invincibility that they had wearing this helmet that was a false sense of invincibility.
Right.
And you know, there may be some subconscious sort of sense of like, okay, well, I got my seatbelt on, so you know, I don't have to pay attention as much. I don't have to, you know, I'm not as worried about if I get in an accident or even if I get into a fender bender. You know, if you get into a little fender bender and you're not wearing your seatbelt, that's a, you know, you've very good chance you'll hit your head on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
You know, so look, I think to me, again, this is an excuse to pull people over.
Well, that's, yeah.
Who, you know, they know a lot of people do not wear a seatbelt or they forget to put their seatbelt on or whatever. You know, if it was about safety, why even have the ticket? Right. Why not just pull people over when you see they're not wearing a seatbelt and tell them to put it on? Watch them put it on and then send them on their way. Why do we need to fine them for not having it on?
Yeah. No, it's absolutely ridiculous. So the other side of that is a revenue, right? The revenue that it will produce. So it gives, like you just said, it gives them an opportunity to pull people over and check to see what they're doing. You know, that's always, you know, they're always looking for an avenue to try to see what you're doing, right?
Right.
And also the other side of it is revenue, right? So there's a revenue aspect to it, and they want to, use it to generate funds. And then the towns and cities get hooked on that revenue, and then they, you know, become this, becomes part of the budget, and now they need to have, you know, this they're hooked on the drug, so to speak.
Right.
So, yeah. So it's just, of course, now again, this is another aspect, right? Nobody's saying you shouldn't wear your seatbelt, right? I'm not just like drugs, right?
Right.
Like if you want to put that into your body, you can, but right. I wouldn't advise it. Same thing with seatbelts. I would advise you to wear a seatbelt. I'm not saying not to, but the fact is it's your decision. You know, it's not something the government should be telling you how to live.
Right.
So where does
it? I totally agree.
Yeah. When does it stop? Like, okay, so if they're all about protecting life, when do they stop? You know,
I mean, you could take it to the most extreme level imaginable, right? Yeah. Why not just take radios out of cars?
Right.
You know, and why not? Let's see. I mean, I can think of a million reasons. Windshield wipers, right? Right. I mean, there are laws that you have to have your windshield wipers on if it's raining, right? You have to. It's a law, right?
And your headlights, I believe, is supposed to be on.
But I don't know about you. There are times where I swear that if I run my windshield wipers continuously on a light rain, it makes it harder to see than if I just run it somewhat intermittently.
Yeah.
Now, let's say I'm driving along and I get pulled over because the guy doesn't see my windshield wipers going. But I'm manually controlling it to wipe the windshield when I really need it.
Right.
You know, so now I get a ticket because I didn't have them running continuously. Right. And one question I had about the seatbelts is, can they pull you over for not having a seatbelt? Because I know before it was pulled over for some other reason. And you're not wearing your seatbelt, you get an extra ticket.
That's right. Now they've changed. They've upgraded the law, if you will, to say that they can pull you over for not having a seatbelt.
Okay, so
that changed within the last, you know, few years or so.
So another question: how easy could it be to know whether or not someone's wearing a seatbelt or not,
right,
as they're driving past you at 40, 50, 60 miles an hour?
Yeah,
this could be used as an excuse to pull someone over. All they have to say is, I see, you're wearing your seatbelt. I thought you weren't wearing it. That's why I pulled you over. Oh, what's that smell?
Yep. What's that smell? Or let me see your driver's license and registration.
Right.
Right. So it becomes this whole other, you know, papers, please, kind of situation, right?
Like, they could say, let's just say that they think you're suspicious looking, mm-hmm. right? For whatever reason, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's the color of your skin. Who knows, right? And they wanted to pull you over. You know, now you don't have to be speeding. You don't have to be driving recklessly. They don't really need a tangible reason. Now they can just claim that they didn't think you were wearing your seatbelt. And look, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not trying to say all police officers are going to do this, right? I assume the vast majority of police officers aren't going to do this type of thing. Mm-hmm. But even the 1% that do, to me, is too much. Yeah. It's giving. There are bad actors out there in any profession, in any industry. And the police are no different. There are bad actors out there, and they're going to take something like this and use it as an excuse to pull people over, to, you know, get them on something else, or to bust their chops, or whatever. They're bored.
Right.
Right. I mean, whatever it is.
So when we posted the article, something a little bit reassuring is a lot of people were, you know, again, well, we've kind of got a biased audience for the most part. We're in agreement with what we're saying. You know, it's nanny. Someone called them nanny state troopers. another person, what police state? Another person, thanks for the warning, so they know. But of course, then there's the ones that, you know, they can't focus. Well, one person says, what was the quote that they, don't break the law and don't get a ticket. You know, that's the mentality, right? Like, yeah, I'm glad, you know, Rosa Parks decided, you know, it's like, yeah, lick the boot, you know, it's just that, you know, some people are just so indoctrinated.
That argument just goes right up my, you know what, because basically what you're saying is that whatever the law is, even if it's a bad law, just obey it.
Yes.
Right. Even if it's bad, what if it's a really bad? Now, I'm not saying, look, it's seatbelts, right? We're not talking about some grave injustice, but it's a nice small little example of these little things they do. And look, it might seem like not a big deal now, right? Like, how many times have you not had your seatbelt on? You see there's a cop up ahead, you put it on real quick, right? I mean, but look what they're doing with speed cameras, right? Am I going to be shocked if at some point they put a sensor in your seatbelt buckle? That if you don't buckle it after, if you forget to put it on and it, you know, gives you a warning, and if you still don't put it on, you're automatically charged a fee or something like that, right? I mean, look, that would ensure that everyone wear their seatbelt pretty much.
Yep.
If they care about safety, why not just put a sensor in the buckle that if you don't put your seatbelt on after a certain amount of time after starting the car or pulling away or whatever, you get an automatic $50 fine.
Yeah, it sends beams up a message to, you know, Skynet, and it says,
that's coming. If they're willing to do this for safety purposes, quote unquote, then that's going to happen.
They have no, well, they don't even have to do that. Just the cameras themselves are taking pictures as you drive by. What's to say if they can, if it's blatant in the picture that they can see you're not wearing your seatbelt, they also give you a ticket for that as well.
Right.
And, you know, what's to say they don't?
Look what happened to Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm. Did you ever watch that show?
Occasionally. Yeah.
So there was an episode where, he made a comment to one of his wife's friends who was walking by, and he said, "Oh, I know that butt anywhere," you know, and she took great offense to it. Like, he thought he was saying she had a big butt. Yeah. So now his wife's giving him a hard time. "Oh, I didn't realize you like big butts," you know, blah, 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 blah. So of course, Larry being Larry, he's going to the Dodger game, and he decides that, he doesn't, he is a ton of traffic, and he wants to drive in the carpool lane, but he's by himself. So what does he do? He picks up a hooker so he can drive in the carpool lane. Meanwhile, he goes, she's digging around for something in the back seat. He's going to pay her for her time just to sit there so he can go in the carpool lane. So she's digging around in the back seat. Her ass is in the windshield, and he blows through, a toll or some camera or something, without noticing it. He gets a ticket. The ticket comes home, and there's the photo of him with this big ass prostitute in his front seat, and his wife's like, "Larry, I knew it."
That's hilarious.
These are the kinds of situations I'm hoping to avoid, Mike.
Well, it's funny you said that. On that point, a similar situation, and I used to hear it in the news when I lived in D.C. I lived in D.C. for a few, outside of D.C., Northern Virginia, for a couple of years. Inevitably, traffic is notorious in the D.C. area, right? Every once in a while, you'd get the nightly news, you'd be watching the nightly news, and they'd have a report of someone that got pulled over with a mannequin that they had in the passenger seat. They were trying to fake it to get into the HOV lane to get into the city, which I always thought was hilarious.
I love that.
Yeah. But
I love that.
So, this, of course, in the comments, going back to the Facebook post, in the comments, it of course shifted again. People, ooh, a squirrel, and they can't focus. So it goes from us complaining about this whole seatbelt thing, which is again affects nobody, right? Like,
right,
except for yourself,
right?
And it shifts to cell phones and texting, which, you know, the laws on cell phones, they need to be concentrated on people on their cell phones and texting, and you know, which, okay, I understand that distracted driving can be a problem, right? It's right. It is an issue, but again, until you actually harm somebody, you've not done any harm.
So. Well, right. Well, here's again, distracted driving should be a crime,
yeah.
Right? And look, obviously, libertarians like us would love to see private roads, right? But people always say, oh, well, of course, you don't want speed limits, you don't want licenses. No. Look. Obviously, if you ran a privately run road, you'd have regulations, right? You'd have rules, obviously, the roads for safety purposes, right? But it would be voluntary, right? Yeah. But so the idea is that where were we?
Texting and driving.
Oh, all right. You're not distracted unless you're distracted. Like, just because you're using your cell phone doesn't mean you're distracted to the point where you're going to cause an issue, right? Because how do you know how often I'm really looking down, and does that really make me distracted? How can you really tell?
Right.
Right. And I get what they're saying. They're saying, well, you know, should we really wait until something happens until we charge you with a crime? Well, yes, that's a crime.
Yeah.
Is when you cause harm to somebody,
yep.
That's a crime. That's when you're committing a crime.
So something, again, unintended consequences, something actually, it was Bill, Bill Hunt. We went out to dinner a couple, weeks back, and we're talking about the text distracted driving, texting while driving law, and he brought up an interesting point of the unintended consequences of that. Back when you were allowed to say text and drive or read your text, many people would hold their phone up in front of them and look ahead, and so your peripheral vision, you could use your peripheral. Now that's another thing. Humans have phenomenal peripheral vision, right? It goes back to caveman days when you protect yourself from predators, right? So, what's the consequence now of it being illegal? People aren't going to hold their phones up because they don't want to get caught.
They're looking down.
So now they bring their phone down and put it in their lap, and they're looking down, and their eyes are completely off the road, right? So, not to say that's a solution to the problem or anything like that, but it's. Again, thinking about the unintended consequences of what happens now, because people are going to do it.
Right.
Prohibition does not work. People are going to still do it. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And not only are they looking down and texting, but they're deleting the text after they do it, because they know if they do get pulled over, they don't want to have evidence that the fact they sent the text message.
Right.
So now you've created an extra distraction that these people are trying to do. You know, so...
But again, like, so where's the line, right? So changing the radio station, is that bad? Is it glancing at your GPS to see where you are on the road? Is that no good? There, I believe.
What about
in Rhode Island? There was a case several years back where somebody was touching the screen on their GPS or something to that effect.
Yes.
And the cop pulled him over, gave him a ticket, and it stood up in court, if I remember right. So that set a precedent.
What if you're looking at the beautiful Rhode Island scenery as you're driving down the highway? I mean, that could off to the, out the side of your window.
Right.
I wonder if Gina texts and drives. What do you think?
I don't know.
Do you think she texts and drives?
Don't blame me.
Oh, well, we never do.
Yeah. So yeah, that was the other thing that again, about getting back to the safety issue, the idea of undercover and low profile police cruisers. I've seen them an increase in them. I know Middletown's got a bunch, East Providence's got a bunch. I've seen lately the state, obviously state police have a bunch. If the idea is, again, it's about safety, right? Keeping people safe. Isn't the mere presence of a police vehicle on the highway or on the roads modifies people's behavior, right? You see a cop, you slow down. You know, like you said, you reach over, make sure your seatbelt's on.
Right.
You drive better, you know, just because you don't want the hassle of getting pulled over.
Right.
So what's the point of having a low profile or undercover vehicle that's sitting and patrolling the highways and streets, right? It's to catch people and give them tickets, right?
Right.
You know, now... there are instances where I do see cruisers like parked in certain areas that there's no cop in it. Have you ever seen those?
Yes.
So you drive by, it's probably like the old model cruiser they haven't gotten rid of yet.
The
so
dummy car. Yeah.
So they park them here and there. And you know, but again, it slows people that you don't know that when you're at a distance. So you slow down. Right. And you know, but again, it's the whole idea of these undercover vehicles. They're not detectives on a stakeout, right?
Right.
They're there to catch you. And again, oftentimes you see them, you know, stopped on the side of the road with, you know, speed traps and whatnot. They're not, you know, sitting in a parking lot, you know, seeing if there are people dealing drugs or something like that. Right. When I see them, they're, you know, very often they're, you know, being used in that capacity.
Right.
You know, it's not like they have two of these vehicles that they're using just for undercover, you know, busts of criminals trying to catch burglars, you know, going house to house. It's many of them used to enforce speed and traffic laws,
which make people hate cops and trust them less.
Yeah.
Right. Cause they're trying to deceive you. Now here's I have a question. This is a very important one. Does the driver of a self-driving vehicle have to wear a seatbelt?
Well, that brings us to our next question.
Do you need a seatbelt buckled in an empty seat?
Right.
Is my question.
Yeah.
Do you? Want to take it from there?
If there's no one there to drive the car.
has a crime been committed?
So this is the latest and greatest in our government-sponsored, cronyism is the announcement earlier in the week of the self-driving vehicle program that they're launching in Providence and I believe in South Kingstown as well, where they're partnered with this with a company. Let me pull up the article so I can get the names right here. But they're partnered with this this company to provide shuttle service, self-driving vehicles. Now, let me say this. The idea of self-driving vehicles as a libertarian is very intriguing to me, right? So if you can get in a vehicle and the vehicle drives itself, you've just eliminated a lot of problems. Again, now with speeding, right? The vehicles are traveling at an efficient speed. Drunk driving no longer becomes an issue. If you're
any form of human error, you've taken that out of the equation.
Right, right. So you know, that's very the way the world is going towards that type of technology, and we will get there. You know, I've heard people say it'll never happen, but well, it is happening. So, interesting side note, my daughter who's getting ready to go to college is going for robotics engineering. So, you know, the joke in the family is she's going to give rise to, you know, Skynet becoming self-aware and she's going to be responsible.
You want to live.
Exactly. But, but you know, from a techie standpoint, I think it's fascinating that, you know, that we're going in this direction. And, so a couple of things I've seen. One is some complaints from some right-leaning people actually about, I think the guy's a truck driver as well, or driver, you know, and complaining about how it's taking, taking my job, you know, kind of thing, which I thought was interesting. And what was the other one? I lost my train of thought. But,
that whole argument is,
I pull up the,
you could go throughout history, right? And you could have made that argument a million times over, right? As technology advances, right? Like there used to be people, dozens of people who used to sit and actually used to run a switchboard, right? When telephone calls would come into, let's say a call center or a big corporation or something, right? They'd have, you know, you see them in those movies that are dated, right? Where you have the women all sitting there and they're plugging the quarter inch jacks into different things and they're running a switchboard, right?
Yep.
That doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Right, because technology advanced, all those jobs are gone. But new jobs are created elsewhere. Yeah. And obviously there are going to be people who are kind of left out at that particular moment.
Right. Well, it frees up resources for people to devote their energy to more, you know, better things, right? You know, sitting at a switchboard, plugging things in sockets is not necessarily productive, right?
Right.
Now you can take that resource, that human resource, and train that person in something more productive that, again, is, you know, so you actually elevate the economy and the industry and jobs and everything across the board by getting rid of the menial tasks.
Right.
Now they can play, well, what about people with, you know, low skilled? Well, whose problem is that? Right. Like right. that's you're responsible for educating yourself and putting, you know, giving yourself opportunity to make a living, right?
Well, and you say low skilled, like let's talk about truck drivers for a minute, right? Because this is what we're talking about, right? Yeah. Or whether it's a bus driver, a truck driver, whatever it is. You know, so like, let's say all the truck driving jobs go away mm-hmm. because they've got self-driving trucks now, right? But like you said, this now that they're the money that they're not using to pay truck drivers, right, now is freed up for something else, which will in turn ultimately require labor, right, of some right. kind. Now, let's say these truck drivers, you might think, oh, well, they're only good at driving trucks. That's not the case, right? They know the roads. They know the routes. They know the times of day, when there's traffic, when there's not traffic. They might have certain strategies and certain intel that's really valuable to the company mm-hmm. that they can now spend 100% of their time providing that sort of consultation to the company. So now you've taken a truck. Now, I'm not saying every truck driver is going to become a consultant, but there will be room for truck drivers who lose their jobs to take on another role within the company. Or let's say in this instance, it's RIPTA, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say all their bus drivers go away now because this takes over in 10 or 20 years, right? There will be openings for them to use their knowledge and expertise in a more productive way, which right. will give them a better wage.
Yep.
So every time technological advancement has caused a huge shift in an industry, right? It's made for, you know, over time, it's made for better work environments, better wages, better jobs for the people that work for that company in general, as a whole.
Right.
It just has.
Yep.
And it makes sense because the more productive you are as a worker, the more money you're going to make.
Yep. Yeah. So the company that's sponsor or putting this on is a company called May Mobility, M-A-Y Mobility, according to the report published Tuesday. So the shuttles will be open to the public, seat 6, and run between Olneyville Square in Providence and Amtrak Station, 6 miles away. Shuttle's route will have 12 stops, and it will run 7 days a week. Doesn't say hours, but so... This company also handles the maintenance of the vehicles, making it virtually turnkey for the city, a convenience in which the city of Providence is shelling out $800,000 during the first year of operation.
Wow.
While it's tough to nail down the exact figures, we imagine that it would compare favorably to the cost of getting several city buses, paying for their fuel maintenance, da, 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 da. So what's the breakdown on that $800,000? I found that in another article. I think that was in the Projo article.
Is that $800,000 a year?
That's what it says, $800,000 in the first
all
year.
All the problems they're having in that city with their schools and stuff, right. And they're spending $800,000 on a shuttle. Who even knows if people really need or want?
Yeah, so the money is coming from... Well, it's interesting because the figures in the Providence Journal don't match up to the $100,000. It's more. The quote from the journal is saying it's being paid with $500,000 in Volkswagen emissions scandal settlement money.
Oh.
So the state, for some reason, got money from the Volkswagen thing, settlement. Yeah. Another $580,000 in research funds from the federal government. So right there, we're over $1 million. We're, you know, over $1 million. And then $145,000 in state dollars, according to DOT spokesperson Charles St. Martin. So, yeah, I don't know why the different articles, obviously, they get different sources.
So there you have two situations with the federal dollars and the state dollars where you've got people who don't even live in Providence paying for a shuttle in Providence.
Yeah.
Whether you live in Montana or you live in Newport.
Yep.
Right? And look. We know that they didn't decide to put this shuttle into service because of some market-based decision that told them there was a need for it or a demand for it. It's almost like, I mean, and this is why you always wonder, like, okay, well, who's running this company that they're partnering with? You know, they get this big contract. They're making a boatload of money,
yeah.
Right? They have a monopoly on this shuttle thing now or whatever in Providence. Who do they know? What conversations were going on? Why did they get picked? Who are the other bidders? Were there other bidders? I mean... All of these questions would be completely unnecessary if it wasn't government that was involved in this.
Yeah. And again, to the people that are concerned about this, you know, and thinking that they shouldn't go, why is the government sponsoring this? You know, if the market wants it, it will happen. You know, the money will be there. The investment will be there through private means, and it will happen. Why is the government sponsor? So if you're going to be mad at them for sponsoring it, because it otherwise might just not happen because the market doesn't bear, you know, doesn't want it. So the fact that they're again, it's an artificiality that they're building into.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and I do get that, you know, sometimes with these settlements, your hands are tied in terms of how you can spend that money. Yeah. And I get that, but obviously that's only half the money we're talking about here.
Yep.
And so it might've been that this Volkswagen money had to be used for some sort of, you know, new technology for public transit or something to do with, you know, that would help with greenhouse gas emissions or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
But so they had to, you know, and if they don't spend it, they lose it, kind of thing.
Yeah,
right.
I know the Google money was a
same thing, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the reason they're building a gigantic brand new safety complex in North Providence. They would not be building that if it wasn't for the Google settlement, you know. So so I get that. But you know, it's funny because we love the technology, but the fact that government's involved in it, it's almost dooming it to failure.
That's right.
This happened when they built the train station down in was it Wickford?
I think it was Wickford, yeah.
Huge, beautiful train station that nobody uses.
Right.
And it costs like $125,000 a year just to do the landscaping or something every year. You know, so, you know, this is going to go nowhere. This is like a small version of the trolley thing they wanted to do in Providence or whatever. And it's just, it's a shame. It's just more wasted money. That's all it is.
I read, I think it was in the ProJo article, I don't have it pulled up here, but I think it was Alorza said he wasn't, of course, all the politicians took rides and all this other nonsense to, you know, photo ops and all this crap.
Did Rep Lombardi take a ride?
I don't know.
Did we see him there?
Has anybody seen Representative Lombardi today?
I think I saw him on the driverless shuttle speaker. I think that's right. I saw him there. He was there. Yeah.
But the quote they got from Alorza was very, like, very nonchalant. Oh, it's not that big a deal. It's not so novel to me because I did this when I was in Austin. So he was on a trip at South by Southwest.
Fun.
Like, well, did the taxpayers pay for you to go out to South by Southwest?
I wanted to go to South by Southwest.
Yeah. But it was funny. He was just like brushing off like he's like so sophisticated. And, I've done this before.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I've driven many driverless shuttles.
So, yeah. It's just absolutely ridiculous. Of course, the governor was there and, you know, talking about how great the program is.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
So this is good for the economy.
Oh, it's great.
And all that good stuff. So it's,
Of course, it's great for the... Oh, God.
Yeah. It's good for the economy when they're spending, you know, your money.
Oh, man, what a waste. What a waste.
But like I said, love the technology. I think it does a lot towards, you know, the potential is there to make you, make us free.
Yeah, yeah. There will undoubtedly be a time where people look back and they're like, man, people, remember when people used to drive cars?
Yeah.
They used to take their hands and they used to turn this wheel and like chimps, they used to drive these cars around like idiots. That's what they'll say.
Yeah. And it's just, but I think they see that because the revenue, they're going to lose the revenue, right? So they need to figure out a way to keep. Now, I didn't read anything about these shuttles are free, I'm assuming, but free, quote unquote,
right,
air quotes. I'm doing my air quotes, free, you know, but anyway, so that's that on the self-driving cars that are now going to be driving around. Well, now, here's a question. What? Yeah. Who's at fault if there is an accident? And then, like we're talking about the seatbelts. If you get in this vehicle and you don't wear your seatbelt.
Well, I think this actually did come up because there was a self-driving Google car or something that they were testing across the country that hit a woman.
Okay.
Right? The woman kind of jumped. And the amazing thing is that the technology on these cars is amazing. They can detect something in the road, you know, and have plenty of time to stop. In this particular situation with the Google car, the woman was trying to commit suicide, right? So she jumped out in front of the car. But as far as I remember, it was, you know, it's the company that ends up being sued or whatever, you know, which, look, here's the thing. Are there going to be incidents? Yes.
Yeah.
But when you take human error out of the equation, yes, look, computers, machines will always have glitches. There will always be issues, but they are far, far, far fewer than human when it comes to human error.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Planes fly almost completely automated.
Right.
It's only on the takeoff and the landing when there's really all a whole lot of human involvement, and that's the most dangerous part of the flight because of the human element.
Right.
So you take that out, You're talking far safer roads. You're talking, instead of drivers being held liable for an accident of some kind, you've got these big corporations who have big budgets, who have insurance and have better insurance and can cover these sorts of costs, and you're probably in a better situation. Would you rather get hit and paralyzed by Joe Schmo on the street or Google?
That's a point, I guess.
I mean, I obviously would much rather not be paralyzed, but if I'm gonna be paralyzed by a car, I'd much rather be the Google car, because then I can build my own safety complex.
All right. Well, I think that's a wrap for this week's episode.
Yes, it is. And we really, again, like Mike was saying about the seatbelt law, all the feedback we got on Facebook. We love the feedback. Yep. We love interacting with everybody. I saw there was someone yesterday or today who didn't even realize we had a podcast. Yep. Was very excited about it. So we hope you're tuning in out there in radio land. And you can find us on any podcast platform. That's iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, all the major ones. You can find us on Facebook, Liberty RI, Twitter, Liberty RI, LibertyRI.com. You can contact Mike at Mike@LibertyRI.com or Eric, that's me, @LibertyRI.com. Please rate the podcast if you can. It really helps us out. Give us feedback. Let us know what we can do better. We love interacting with you guys, and we really love doing the podcast, and we really hope to see you next time.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Rhode Island Liberty Report. Be sure to check us out at libertyri.com.